baby. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Hi.
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 How are you?
That was a soprano high right
that
there.
Was a soprano high. Maybe you can hit those high notes.
I don't know about that. I'm not going to try. I'm Dana.
I'm Kristen.
And this is The Darker Side of Life.
Welcome.
Thank you for joining us. This is the podcast where two best friends tell each other some very weird, creepy, disturbing, dark, morbid, unsolved, mysterious, creepy stories, but we don't tell each other what we're going to talk about.
It's a surprise. I don't think you'll have guessed this story at all.
Probably not. You give me hints, but mm-hmm. I'm at a loss.
So we're going to go to Ireland, and nice. We are going to talk about changelings, fairies, and the case Ooh. Of Bridget Cleary.
Oh, mm-hmm. Ooh, interesting.
Yes, this was okay. So much fun. And I have some fun stories I'll share at the end. I talked to my dad yesterday because our family is Irish and we have a lot of relatives over there and we have some here in the States. My dad grew up with his grandfather living with them at the house. My great grandpa, Peter, who was from Ireland, off the boat Irish, came over in 1915. So I was really curious and I asked my dad if he had any stories from my great grandpa that he remembers or any relatives that would come over. So at the end, I'll share just a couple Irish stories
oh, nice. Okay,
that
cool.
I heard at the end. They're kind of spooky and I think explains why I like what I do. Because of my
it's hereditary.
Family, I think it's hereditary.
You.
Yes,
it's like
it
in
is.
Your DNA.
Yes, but this time we're talking specifically about changelings, fairies, and a woman named Bridget Cleary. Okay. And if you're from Ireland, guaranteed you probably know this case. But I'm going to start off with a little rhyme, kind of like how we did with the Lizzie Borden story.
Okay,
and it goes. Are you a witch or are you a fairy or are you the wife of Michael Cleary?
Oh.
Yes.
You know it's not going to turn out good when people make like rhymes
no,
and schoolyard
never
songs about
you
them.
You never want a rhyme made about you. Chances yeah. are something has happened to you. And it is not good for Bridget. We'll just leave it at that. So I do want to talk first just a little bit, start off about the folklore and beliefs surrounding fairies. And they are known throughout many cultures, and today people still believe in their existence. The origins include the Britons, Welsh, Cornish, Irish, Scots, Germanic, French. There's even stories out of Africa, so they kind of span everything. But I'm going to specifically focus on Ireland and kind of the views of these beings from the Irish, because I wasn't going to cover all of them. And so fairies, everyone kind of has a picture of what a fairy looks like. I mean,
I picture Tinkerbell.
Tinkerbell.
100%. Tinkerbell.
Classic. Fairies were said to live underground in what are called fairy mounds, and it's like a whole other realm that can't be seen by humans, but they kind of like exist beside humans, so it's kind of like parallel existence, but we just can't see the fairies. And fairies are called the good people. That's how they're referred to in Ireland. Fairies are human-like, but they're usually very beautiful. We usually see them depicted as very small creatures. You think of someone like Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
They are said to wear green clothing or green dresses, and some people describe them as small. Others actually describe them as bigger than humans. So it kind of goes across the board
Whoa.
Of what, like, the size of some of these fairies. They can also change their appearance, and if they would appear as something different, it would usually be a rabbit or a hare. Fairies, this is kind of funny. Fairies were said to like whiskey. Football, but soccer for all of us.
I was going to say, come to Kentucky. Heck yeah.
Gaelic football. So whiskey, football, music, singing, dancing, gold, milk, and tobacco. So
what?
They like to have a good time. Fairies party. Fairies have
nice.
A good time.
Fairies party.
Milk's kind of the random thing. Like,
I know.
Here's a glass of milk with your tobacco.
But if I was ever, I'm not a huge drinker. So if I went to a fairy party, I'm like, I'll be a glass. I'll be Moss from the IT crowd.
I don't know who that is, but okay.
Oh my gosh. It's this funny, funny, funny comedy out of England. On
I know.
Netflix.
I've heard of it. I just haven't seen it. Fairies did not like iron, fire, salt, urine, and Christianity.
Oh my God.
Yes.
One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. But remember those, because some of those are going to come into play. If you are a fan of the show Supernatural, there is actually a, I think it's a hilarious episode that has to do with fairies. Jensen Ackles is just gold in this, and I crack up every time I watch it. But they deal with some of those same things of like the iron and the salt and the milk. But if you haven't watched that episode, I don't know what season it is, but it is hilarious. He is just a beautiful person. And even though fairies were known as the good people, they were troublemakers. They could be blamed for poor harvest, stolen crops, sickness, and bad luck. They could make some positive things happen in your life, but you really wanted to stay on the good side of a fairy and not tick it off because it could have some serious consequences. And fairies were thought to dwell in what is known as a ring fort or a fairy fort. So ring forts are actual things that do exist all over Ireland and sure parts of Europe. We actually have one that's very similar here in Columbus that I just realized recently. In the park that I walk at, they call it an earthworks, but it's kind of the same kind of idea of what a ring fort is or a fairy fort. So they are remains of an ancient dwelling that date back to at least the Iron Age. And they think there's about 60,000 ring forts in Ireland. And so these ring forts would surround settlements and kind of encircle them. So you would have, you'd have like a settlement in the middle with fencing up, wooden fencing up. And then the earth would be kind of pushed up into a ring and to make like a mound. So it would push it up really high to create this small hill as a form of defense, not necessarily for war, but to protect the people and the livestock inside. And it would kind of wall in the settlement. And then the earth that was pushed up would create a ditch around it as another line of defense. So think like a moat. You have kind of like, so you have these early kind of communities that are protected by these mounds of earth, and it creates a circular structure, and inside you'd have houses, you'd have livestock, everything would just be protected. And so now obviously all the wooden structures that once existed are gone, but we still have the banks of these ring forts that exist and remain all over Ireland and apparently in Columbus as well. And so before we had modern technology and archaeology and historical knowledge, these became very mysterious to people. And before they even knew what it was, stories kind of started to come out, like folklore started to kind of build around these ring forts about what they were. And so then you have the term fairy fort that comes from that. So people believed that these ring forts were actually used by the fairies, that they were protected by druid magic, and the fairies lived there and then defended and protected it with that same magic. And
sweet.
Yeah, kind of cool. I kind of want to go see these. So altering or disturbing any of these structures in any way could have really serious consequences, like death. You could die if you disturb these, because it would tick the fairies off because it's their home. They were also seen as gateways into other worlds. So they were seen as something between our world and the fairies' world, and that the fairies could come kind of in and out of into our world, and where they could take people and take people through these gateways. And as recently as 2017, there was actually a politician in Ireland who blamed this. I guess they were trying to build a road and they were having a lot of problems with it. And he actually blamed these problems on the fairy forts. It was basically like, yes, yes. And I'll have a story at the end that my dad told me from one of our relatives over there that was pretty recent, talking about kind of fairy folklore. So this is, I mean, I wouldn't say it's as widespread as it was when this story is taking place or even before that, but there are definitely people who still believe in fairies. Like I see a lot of them on, because just some of the accounts I follow on Instagram, like people believe in it. They leave offerings for fairies. And there's an actor I follow and he's from Scotland, and he posted a picture of hiking and like mentioned the fairies are out and about, be careful of the fairies. So it's like, it still seems to be alive in the culture. maybe yeah. not as much as before, but yeah, people still believe that problems today can be caused from these fairy forts or making the fairies angry.
It could be something too that you're brought up with. Mm-hmm. I think we mentioned this in the Bell Witch story. Like where I'm from, we hear the story of the Bell Witch, and we never did Bloody Mary in the mirror. We did mm-hmm. I Hate the Bell Witch in the mirror. To this day, I still won't do it.
I was thinking of Bell Witch.
If you grow up in a place among people that still talk about these things, mm-hmm. there may be a part of you, you just grow up thinking this exists. This is part of it. So this is, you know, even if it's reality or not, it could be superstition. It could be, right. you know, just like a person's religious faith or spirituality. You know, they grow up with a certain thing and that's what they believe. And then that's it.
Yeah. You know, if I had grown up hearing this, if I grew up in Ireland and maybe I don't necessarily believe in fairies, but if I pass one of these fairy forts, I'm probably not going to want to risk it. It's like, I'm not going to risk it just in case, because it's just kind of rooted in who we are. So
yeah,
I think it's kind of cool.
And it could be a sacred space for, you know, the people that live around there.
Well, for sure. And even if it has a connection to druids, I mean, that is a completely spiritual, I would say. I mean, that's like foundation of so much. And when I was out at the park here walking, where I figured out where our kind of ring fort was, it's an earthwork, but there's like a plaque that kind of describes what it is. And when mm-hmm. I was reading the plaque, and Janice was with me, and I didn't mention this to her, so I'm sure she'll listen to this, because I didn't want to give away what my story was. But when I was reading the plaque, I looked, and there was like a little bundle of little tiny violet flowers that were like laying up on the plaque. And it Aww. Made me realize, I was like, I wonder if somebody left these for like as an offering for someone, because it was an odd place Probably. For them to be laying, because it's like a wooden plaque. Yeah, they were just kind of laying like up, kind of like draped on top of it. So it made me wonder if it was an offering that was made. And I mean, that's here in Ohio.
Yeah, maybe.
So yeah, we talked about these fairy forts are gateways or doorways that the fairies could use. And unfortunately, if a child disappeared, the fairies were usually blamed, and it was said that the fairies had taken the children through the doors. And this is where changelings come in. Another part of our story. So
it's just like the Angelina Jolie movie?
Well, that's kind of where it came from. I never realized what that really meant. If you haven't seen the movie, it's actually a very good movie and based off of a true story as well. But so that is where the title, at least, of that movie comes from. So it is believed that fairies would take a human child and then leave a fairy child in their place. And this was known as a changeling. This changeling would have some kind of disability or illness, or maybe like a physical deformity that was maybe untreatable or hard to treat and by any doctor, but could possibly be treated by a fairy doctor. There were actual doctors out there who were said to be touched by the fairies, yeah. or their family had some experience with the fairies, and they were able to help with anyone who was afflicted with something related to a fairy. Changeling folklore, like fairies, it really spans the globe. Like, it pretty much is all through Europe. It's in Africa. All kinds of cultures believe in this, some kind of belief. Like, we know the term doppelganger. That's yes. kind of like changeling-esque. And when a changeling is left in place of a stolen child, that human child is taken by the fairies to their realm. And there are several reasons why a fairy might want to do this. They may want a servant or a slave in the fairy realm. They maybe just want human love. They crave human love. They could want revenge for something that a human has done to make them mad, like disturbing their home, disturbing a fairy fort, making them angry. That's why you don't go disturbing fairy forts. Also believed that sometimes children were offered up by the fairies to a darker power so the fairies could have freedom. So basically Ooh. Kind of selling them to I don't know if it was like the devil, but some yeah. kind of like dark power. Humans could also be used to breed with the fairies to strengthen the fairy line. Not a lot of good reasons. Sometimes also it was said that they would kind of feed off the children to get.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was kind of twisted, but.
I think I could love a fairy just by like meeting one.
Don't make
like,
it mad.
You don't
mad.
Have to like kidnap a children to be like, we can be friends. Like we can hang out.
They're fickle. They're fickle characters, apparently. So you have to
so
be nice
must have given
to them.
Salt.
Or urine or prayed to them something. They don't like Christianity either.
Give them some whiskey and
give
milk.
Give them a soccer like, ball.
Yeah. Give them a soccer ball with some whiskey and milk. Good to go. And let's have a party.
Most of the time, a changeling was a child, but sometimes it could be an adult. There were times that people believed an older adult was taken and an older changeling was left in its place to kind of live out the rest of their days in the love and warmth of a human home. And the most beautiful children were the ones who were in a lot of danger to be taken by the fairies because the fairies wanted... don't be so sure. They liked blonde hair and blue or silver eyes. That was what most was admired. What color
are
your
eyes? I have hazel eyes.
Okay,
hazel.
But you have blonde hair. So
they kind of get greenish too. Like it depends on the weather and my mood and all. My eyes have a different kind of tone to them sometimes.
Well, then they'd be like, oh, her eyes change tone. We really want her. Shit. She's blonde. I'm brown hair and hazel eyes.
Okay, so what if my hair is kind of a dishwater blonde and then the highlights are just enhanced?
You have to ask a fairy.
I'm going to make a case to downgrade myself.
Dye your hair black, just like wear contacts. You know, because the fairies liked these very beautiful children, it was a bad idea for anyone to look too long at a child. And this was called overlooking a child. So basically like admiring them and, oh, aren't you so pretty? Aren't you so beautiful? If you did that, you had to immediately say a prayer to protect it from the fairies, because if you were giving it a lot of attention, that drew the attention of the fairies and they could take your child.
Well, that's a double whammy if you say a prayer, too.
Well, yeah, they don't like Christianity, don't like but Christianity. Maybe they'll stay away then and be like, screw this. We don't want
to
be part of
this. Have
to
worry about that, because sometimes staring at like babies and stuff and they look at you back have the blankest look on their face, but it's also a look of I know everything and you know nothing. And it's like the ultimate poker face. And I get like... anxious. I have to look away.
Well, we'll talk about later how that could be a changeling. That could be a changeling oh, no. trait.
It's like every baby I've ever met. It is. It's like a poker. Like, I would not win a staring contest with a baby. Nope. Baby would.
You don't know what you're thinking. You're like, what are you thinking? You're like,
every time.
You can't talk. You eat and you poop. What are you doing?
Freaking me out. Well, making
we'll
me
get to that later.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable around very small children.
Children who had physical deformities or some kind of condition, or even ones who started to become extra fussy or acted out of character, were immediately suspected to be changelings. And for the most part, if a family suspected their child was actually a changeling, they would end up caring for the changeling and treat it well because they feared that, you know, their child, their human child is back in the fairy realm. And if I mistreat this thing that is considered a fairy, they could harm my child or hurt them out of revenge. So I'm going to take care of it. But there are cases where children were abused who were thought to be changelings, because there were some people that hoped if I hurt this changeling, then their fairy family will come get it to save it and bring my child back. So obviously, probably some of these were legit thinking this is a changeling. I do wonder how many cases of abuse were blamed on this, but were actually abuse. So
yeah, I know.
There were some children that were abused, and sometimes people would just abandon the changeling child. Just if it was too sick or deformed, they would just leave it outside to die, and
that
was it. And then hope that okay, my child will be happy and safe with fairies, but I can't take care of this. And you think about this because, you know, back in even like the medieval pre-industrial Europe, this folklore belief was very strong, and a family's survival very much depended on everybody in the family pulling their weight, including kids, and helping out. I mean, that was survival. So if they have a child or a baby or even just a family member that's sick and that's not able to continue because something maybe is different with them, maybe they're sick, maybe they have some kind of physical problem where they can't work, unfortunately, that family is going to see them as a drain on the family and on society. So it would be easier for these families to believe that this sick child was not an actual child in that right. their child was off happy and healthy, and it would make it easier for them to just take this quote changeling and leave it out in the woods to die.
Which just breaks that like familial connection. Yes. It's like, this is no longer my DNA. This is no longer my family. Like, this isn't part of us.
This
like,
isn't me. This is not else. Human. This isn't even human. So my
you detach will be yourself.
It's a detachment.
Baby.
And
yeah. And it justification in their minds. Mm-hmm. That's how they justify it.
And, you know, obviously that's hard for us now to think about that, because obviously what we know, medical wise, scientific wise, you know, kids get sick and they can be cured. Yeah. Kids have behavioral problems that can be worked on. Sometimes a child might have something physically wrong with it that.
And they can still work.
They can, you
they can
give them the time, you
I
give
can.
Them the love, you give them the time to work, and they can be a regular part of society, no problem. Right. But back then it was seen as, we don't really have time for this, so we just have to move on, which is, it's awful. It's not saying that it's okay, but I think you have to look at it from a historical point of why some of these yeah. things might have happened. Also, don't let me forget to list my sources at the end.
Oh, okay.
Totally forgot. There was also a high mortality rate in Ireland of women that died in childbirth, and then miscarriages and stillbirths. And I did read that allegedly like a large number of stillbirths were boys, so it was feared that boys were more vulnerable to be taken by the fairies. So to confuse the fairies, boys were dressed like girls. Think of a christening gown.
Oh, cool.
I mean, we still dress okay. boys in christening gowns, so they were dressed. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure that my parents have an old picture of it, maybe of my great grandpa in Ireland and one of his brothers, or it's my grandpa, and I don't know, but they're both in dresses. They're both boys, and they're both in dresses and little boots. But that was normal of like, we're just going to dress our boys like
that's
girls.
Funny, because my mom has a picture of her dad, my grandpa, mm-hmm. on top of our fireplace mantle when he was little, and he's wearing a dress. And my mom was be like, you know, tell me who everybody was in the photo. And I'm like, who's the little girl in the dress? 5 or 6 years old, uh-huh. maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how old he was. She's like, that's your grandpa. And I'm like, why is he wearing a dress? But she's like, it's just, we're poor families. Like, we were poor. And then he had older sisters. You wear hand-me-down clothes until yeah. you get a certain age, you know, where you need other clothes. But that was our case. It had nothing to do with, you know, the christening or anything. I just think it's funny that you have pictures of your grandparents wearing mm-hmm. dresses, and then I have pictures of mine wearing yeah. dresses.
And there were signs that you could look for to see if you were dealing with a changeling and not a human baby. So like a change in demeanor from happy to sad, because, you know,
that's called being
never
a baby.
Sad. I mean,
I know, right? Babies never just
Lord,
start crying.
God, Javi went from 0 to 60 in like 2 seconds, and it was a bomb went off. Yes. So yeah, that's a sign. A change in appearance where a child suddenly seems older or wiser. You said that. They look smarter.
Are you sure your nephew is not one? Because I remember the comment about the Wizard of Oz. And
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When the Wicked Witch did not reconcile herself.
Yes.
What?
Like, where did you learn that word? You're 3.
When he was like 2 or 3, he told his dad not yes. to taunt him. Don't taunt me, Daddy. And then his like huge bomb that he dropped on me, this philosophical bomb, when we were getting ready to watch Karate Kid. And I said, oh, I love the Karate Kid. And he said, Tia, love cannot, or a movie cannot bring you love. What?
He has never seen the Goonies.
Oh my God.
So I'm just saying.
So, but this is a baby that suddenly seems like older or wiser, or possibly suddenly grows a beard. That's another sign.
Okay. That to me is the biggest sign. If my baby grows a beard, yes. suddenly, probably a changeling.
Eating a lot but losing weight, which I think it's probably a medical condition.
Hyperthyroidism.
Yeah. A look in their eyes that looked, quote, shifty and not innocent like a baby. Because
all babies.
Yes, all babies. And this is the best part. Fairies, like I said, loved music. So if your baby suddenly picked up an instrument and started playing like, you know, like freaking Yo-Yo Ma, you are dealing with a changeling.
Yo-Yo Ma. Except there was some Kenny G and a saxophone with his beard.
Beard, yeah. And it's better.
Okay. So, okay, good signs. Those two, I think, are the ones I'm going to look for the most.
Yeah, you just start, like, playing an instrument. It's like, okay, this kid's, like, you know, Billy Joel on the piano. We've got a problem.
I'd be like, my kid is a genius. We are going on tour. I'm going to be rich.
These people are like, this is not my kid. This is a fairy. And if you're Irish and Scottish, you know, the changeling will normally start playing bagpipes. So just, like, bagpipes playing out of the blue. That's what you want to look for.
So, like, if somebody was going to go drop off their changeling child in the woods who's probably walking and has a beard, and he's just, like, playing Amazing Grace on the bagpipes as they stroll down the path.
In his little diaper.
And just leaves him. It's like, all right, mama's going to go find some mushrooms and berries. You stay here. And the baby's going to be like, I know you're not coming back.
Because he's wise. He's wise. Because I'm wise. He knows what's happening. There were times where a fairy wouldn't even bother leaving a kid or, like, a changeling behind. They would just leave, like, a bundle of sticks and twigs that would wither and die. So,
oh, well. Like,
I mean, that's a big red flag, too.
It's the Blair Witch.
Yes. People who wanted their loved ones back, they did have a few things that they could do. Mm-hmm. Do you have a question?
No, I was just thinking, if you wanted to kidnap somebody's kid, all you had to do was leave a bundle of sticks and things in their crib and then kidnap their baby, and then they would think it was fairies. I bet it wouldn't be investigated very well.
Yeah, but then
well.
Do you risk, like, making the fairies mad doing that?
That's true.
Make the fairies mad. Be like, you tried to pin this on me. This is not on me. You did this. Now I'm going to steal your child.
Like, well, if you're kidnapping a child, you probably don't have one of your own. So the kid's probably going to get taken by the fairy anyway.
They could take an adult.
The kidnapper's just the middleman at this point.
This is such a mess.
Or maybe the kidnapper works for the fairies and somehow he gets paid to kidnap the babies and just put them all in a place where the fairies can come get them.
I mean, I'm sure that could happen. I mean, to get into good standing with the fairies,
they do like gold.
Just bringing bringing babies.
Berries? Where's my whiskey and money?
And my football.
This was not our agreement.
Give me my football, my milk. I'm glad you're laughing now because this story does get very dark. I told you were going to really be entertained by part of this story, but then the other part gets very dark. So
I just have a mental image of, like, an angry baby with a beard, like, storming off with a glass of milk and a saxophone because he didn't get his money that he wanted.
All you Irish people, we are not laughing at your folklore. I think it's amazing, but it's funny mental images. All right. So if somebody wanted their loved one, their baby, their child, or just an adult loved one back, there were some things that they could possibly do. None of these are really good. So some thought that they needed to dunk a child or person in foxglove water, which can result in drownings. And it did happen in a case of a little boy. I believe his name was Michael Leahy, where he was dunked underwater because he was suspected to be a changeling, and he died from that.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, so that's one of those cases where, for the most part, if someone had a changeling, they would treat it well. But there are cases where this happened.
Seems like it's like baptism symbolism or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, that makes sense. People also believe that they themselves could wait outside a fairy fort for the fairies to come out. And then hopefully they would be able to, like, say what they needed to convince them to be like, hey, give me my kid back.
He's got the adult baby with a beard and saxophone and milk looking at his watch like, come on. We've been here for an hour.
I cannot take the saxophone anymore. Can you stop? Can you pick a new instrument? Try a mandolin. It's small. Feeding someone the first milk of a cow that had just had a calf would usually do the trick because fairies loved milk and cream.
Okay.
Fairies were also afraid of fire. If you held something with fire next to them and you asked them their name three times, that would bring out the fairy. Or you could just stick them right in the oven. And
oh, God.
There you go.
What?
Yes. Or the fireplace.
People put their children in ovens?
I did not see any cases of that. I didn't look too hard for cases about that because I don't really want to know that, but that's something.
Oh, God.
We'll talk a little bit about something close to that with the Bridget Cleary case once we get to that. I told you, get your laughs out now because it gets dark.
Okay, good.
It gets dark. And I did want to read a little story that was on the website emeraldisle.ie. It is about the part of this folklore that says boiling eggshells would actually help to reveal a changeling. You would boil these eggshells and then all of a sudden it would make them speak, regardless if this was like a little baby. They would speak and they would reveal all this information about themselves and they would be revealed as a changeling. So I'm going to read this just... I'm going to read the story that was posted on emeraldisle.ie.
Okay, good. Because that seems like the easiest way by far.
Yes, for sure. Okay. Changelings were crafty sorts as well, so you had to have your thinking cap on when dealing with them. One young mother by the name of Maureen Doherty felt something was amiss with her child, so she went to consult with a wise man, a storyteller who lived several miles away. When she returned, taking his advice, she emptied out the yolks from several eggs and filled them with water. Seeing out of the corner of her eyes, the babe watched her every move closely. "What are you about, Ma?" asked the baby. Her heart lurched in her bosom for what? Hold on. Her heart lurched in her bosom then for what child could speak at that age. "I'm brewing, my lovely child," she said hoarsely, placing the eggshells in the fire. "What's that you're brewing then, mother?" said the babe, craning out of its crib with narrowed eyes. "Why, eggshells, of course," she replied, upon which the child burst out in a great gust of dry, high laughter, like an old man who's seen a dancing chicken wearing a bow tie. "My eyes have seen the burning of Rome and London, but they haven't yet seen the likes of this," the creature cackled, and Maureen turned with her heavy iron ladle in hand, raised as if to strike, and rushed at the crib. But she tripped over and hit her head, awakening to find the changeling gone and her son back safe and sound.
Oh, yeah. Well.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. So the eggshells made the baby talk and mm-hmm. cackle like an old man. And then he was gone.
Once and she hit her head woke after.
Up, she hit it the after. Baby talked. Apparently.
Okay.
But then if nothing worked, the changeling would grow into a person they called an oaf. We use this term today.
Oh.
They would be slow, have poor manners, and the family would never have luck again. So they were just kind of screwed to be
oh, that sucks.
Bad luck. But they did hope that their child was off with the fairies living a happy and well life. That was kind of the silver lining for them. And we do joke about things like this now, but like I said, there are cases of people dying that were suspected to be changelings. The little boy, Michael Leahy, was drowned in 1826 in Kerry because he was suspected of being a changeling. Then there was the case of a six-year-old girl named Mary Ann Kelly in County Tipperary who died after being suspected of being a changeling and endured awful treatment and abuse by her family and eventually was kind of just left out in the cold and
oh,
ended up
so
dying from her treatment. She was 6 years old. So, but... Another case of a suspected changeling is the case of Bridget Cleary, also of County Tipperary, and that's who we're going to talk about today. So the events that what happened to Bridget is terrible, what happened to her. So that's why I said get your laughs
oh,
out
no.
now when we talk okay. about fairies, because it is awful what happened to Bridget, and she was failed by so many people. But you are going to love Bridget when I tell you a little bit about
okay,
her,
because
I okay. loved reading about her. Bridget Cleary was born Bridget Boland in 1869 in Ballyvadley County, Tipperary, Ireland. So in my opinion, Bridget was really progressive with her life for the time. So at the time that everything happened with Bridget, she was living in Ireland and Ireland had seen a lot of really hard times and they were seeing a lot of changes and kind of slow modernization at this point. She was in like the late 1800s. So I'm going to like just briefly touch on Irish history. I could do a whole podcast series on Irish history with everything that happened. But 19th century Ireland had a lot going on. There were a lot of like fights for landowner rights. Obviously, England is ruling and the Irish were really pushing for what was called home rule. So they wanted an independent Irish state. Obviously, England did not want that. There were a lot of rebellions. There was modernization, industrialization, emigration. And then obviously the one that most of us know about because we learn about in school is the potato famine.
Yes.
Here in the States, we call it the potato famine, but it was mostly called the Great Famine, the Great Hunger, or the Irish potato famine.
That's like the only thing I remember learning about Ireland in school.
Me too.
Historically.
Me too. And I like it was probably just like a chapter in a book of what.
Yeah, and this happened in Ireland.
But it, I mean, when you think about it, it's seriously just like it shifted Ireland culturally, yeah. politically, the landscape of Ireland, but also how many people it sent over here to the States. Yeah. So, I mean, it really had a worldwide impact. It started in 1845, ended in 1852. Caused by a mold on the potato, which was obviously like the main crop in Ireland, but it did affect potatoes throughout Europe. About 1 million people died during the famine, and more than a million Jeez. Immigrated to places like the United States, which, like I said, really like affected the population of Ireland. Mm-hmm. It was said between 1845 and 1855, about 2 million people left Ireland. So that's a whole
that's
lot
a
of
lot.
It's a lot of people. That's it's an island. Like
yeah.
I forget sometimes. I'm like, oh yeah, Ireland is an island. So yeah. that's a lot of people. And this changed a lot with this made Ireland change a lot. It really affected things politically, culturally. There was a lot of tension with the English government, which was already high. The Irish language started to decline. I was talking to my dad a little bit about it yesterday, and he knows, you know, his grandpa spoke Irish because he had to learn it, obviously. Yeah. And even like relatives that my parents met when they went over, I think in 2005, like they all spoke Irish because they learned it. They had to learn it right. in school. So Bridget was born 17 years after the famine. But I mean, the shifts that were caused from that were still very much felt in Ireland. And there's a podcast I did listen to, the Dark Histories podcast, on this story.
Oh, I like that one.
I like this one. And then he interviewed somebody in it who does a podcast on Irish history and actually did an episode on this case as well. So that was, and he's Irish, so it was a lot of good information. But they talked about on the Dark Histories podcast that Bridget had three brothers. I never really saw anything about her brothers. So I don't know if they had died by the time all this happened or if they had emigrated to the United States. So, but I did want to mention it's possible she did have three brothers.
Okay.
And Bridget lived in Ballyvedley. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's spelled like Ballyvedlia, but when I heard it pronounced, it was Ballyvedley.
Okay.
The population in 1851 was 112 people. By 1891, wow. it was 31 people.
Oh, geez.
Yes. So very small.
Small town.
And most people living here worked on farms. They lived a rural life. Many didn't really have an education. But Bridget's father, Patrick Boland, was very insistent that his children were going to have a better education than he had growing up. So I do know that Bridget went to a school that was run by nuns. So she did have an education. When she finished school, she got a job as a dressmaking apprentice in a town called Clonmel. It was about 11 miles from Ballyvedley. So this would be considered a bigger town for the time, like the big city. And it was in Clonmel that Bridget met a man named Michael Cleary. He worked as a cooper, and coopers make barrels. I had to look it up. Had no idea what a cooper was.
I was going to think somebody that built coops for chickens, but...
Nope. Cooper, COOPER.
Okay. I wonder if this is the origins of the last name, Cooper.
Oh, I don't know. It's interesting.
Because a lot of last names were derived from occupations mm-hmm. back in the day. Yeah. So I wonder if that's part
of it.
It
could be, okay, Cooper.
Cool. I learned something new today.
Glad I could teach. But yes, Coopers made barrels that would be used for shipping. So he made a pretty decent living from this. Bridget met Michael in August 1887 and married him in the same month, same year. So not a big courtship, not very long, married pretty quickly. Bridget was 18 at the time and Michael was 27. So there was a 9-year age difference. And this was apparently unusual at the time. I would have thought it would not be, but I think the 9 years was kind of odd for people. And that was not the only thing that was odd about the couple. After they married, Bridget returned to her hometown of Ballyvedley in County Tipperary to live with her parents while Michael stayed behind in Clonmel and continued to work as a cooper. So they lived apart. And
okay.
because of the distance between them, like right now, 11-ish miles doesn't seem that much, but there weren't cars back then. So yeah. you had to walk on foot. So Michael and Bridget only saw each other on the weekends. During the week, they both worked, you know, miles apart, and then they saw each other on the weekends. Bridget continued to work as a dressmaker. She had a brand new Singer sewing machine. And this was really big because at the time, this type of sewing machine was brand new. It was state of the art. Not everybody had one of these. And once again, it's one of those things that's kind of changing with the landscape. You have this technology that is coming into play. So having this sewing machine, she was able to really carve out a living for herself as a dressmaker. And she made a really good name for herself around town. And she didn't stop there. She bought chickens and she raised them and she sold their eggs to local people. So she was really seen as this like really independent entrepreneur woman.
Oh, sweet.
Worked for herself. She
bunch of side hustles.
Yeah, she did. I told you, you're going to like her.
Do your thing.
So she was progressive. And that was very unusual. And, you know, she wasn't living with her husband. She was independent, professional, made her own money. But another thing that was odd and people very much took notice of was that Bridget and Michael never had any children. We don't know why. We don't know if she couldn't have children, if she mm-hmm. decided, I don't want children, if he decided, I don't want children. They had no children. So that was weird. And it sparked a lot of rumors. A lot of people blame this on fairy forts. They blamed it on fairies. She couldn't have kids because of the fairies. But it also sparked rumors of affairs. So there were a lot of rumors that both Michael and Bridget were having affairs. Apparently, Michael had one in Clamel. That was never confirmed. He always denied it. Bridget was supposedly having an affair with a neighbor named William Simpson, who will come up later. He was married with children of his own, but he was not well-liked around town. So it seems like kind of people latched on to that. But again, that was never confirmed. Everybody who knew the couple said they were really happy with each other and they never had any affairs. So maybe they had a modern marriage. I don't know. Maybe okay. they had an open marriage. I don't know.
Maybe it was an arranged marriage for some reason.
I don't know.
I don't know. It's, maybe they were like 27 and you're not married yet. Like, what's up, dude?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I guess I'll marry this girl. And it's like, you're 18. You're not married yet. Okay, we'll get married. I don't know, but they had some kind of arrangement.
We don't really know that much about the marriage. But they seemed to be doing well for themselves. They both had successful businesses, and for the most part, people said they seemed happy.
Okay.
And in the 1800s, about 75% of Ireland was rural. But by the turn of the century, things were kind of starting to change and expand. So there were more houses that were being built and sold. Towns were growing. More people were coming in. And in 1891, Bridget's dad bought a piece of property with a house on it for Bridget and Michael. So this property was they called it like a laborer's property. And I guess only laborers could buy it. And so Michael and Bridget okay. couldn't buy it themselves because they weren't considered a laborer. But because Patrick had been when he was younger, he was able to purchase this house for them. And, you know, he could purchase this house. They would have their own house. And then Michael could finally come live with them from Clamel. And this piece of property with this cottage was nice. Like, it was a nice little piece of property, but it didn't have a lot of interest in it because it was near a fairy fort. So people kind of avoided it. Obviously not Patrick. He went ahead and bought it up. Bridget and Michael didn't have any problems moving into it. So they moved in, but not long after they moved in, Bridget's mom died. I don't know what her name was. Couldn't find what her name was. I could only see the name, find the name of her dad, Patrick, but her mother did pass away. And of course, who does this get blamed on? It gets blamed on the fairies. They have a house near the fairy fort, so we're going to blame her mom's death on the fairies. It just seems like a way that they explain things, like to make it almost easier of like,
yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not going to get sick. I'm not going to die anytime soon because I don't live next to a fairy fort, but she did. So I think it's just like a way sometimes people reason things away to make themselves feel better. And after the death of his wife, Patrick Bullen came to live with his daughter, Bridget, and son-in-law in their new cottage. And Michael was able to use Patrick's old house. I guess he kept the property. He was able to use that for his Cooper business. So he had like his whole space for it. Bridget had her own space for her dressmaking and to raise her chickens. So successful couple. The winter of 1895 was a bad one, and it had been very cold. There had been lots of snow. It had been a rough winter. So by March, everyone's ready for spring. And on March 4th, it was a Monday, and Bridget always delivered eggs around town to people on Mondays. So on that Monday, it was no different. She set out to deliver eggs to her dad's cousin, a man named Jack Dunn. Jack was in his 50s. He is described as being very superstitious and someone who very much believed in the fairies, knew a lot about them, very much believed in them. On her way to Jack's house, Bridget had to pass a fairy fort. This is what made me realize I think I would be friends with Bridget if I knew her now, because most people avoided the fairy forts. They didn't want to pass them. They didn't want to like make the fairies mad, but Bridget didn't. She always liked to stop at the fairy forts because she was fascinated with them, and she would always stop and she would leave small little offerings for the fairies and then go on her way.
See, that's sweet.
I love her because I can see myself being like, this is, I mean, I went to a burial mound the other day, like, because it's cool. It's in a park. Yeah. I walk in. I am not like trekking through trying to find burial mounds, but unfortunately, when Bridget got to Jack's house, he wasn't there. So she waited for a bit, but the weather was starting to turn and she knew she needed to walk a mile and a half back home. And unfortunately, by the time she left, it started raining. So she walked all the way back home in the rain, in the cold. So no surprise, on March 5th, Bridget woke up with a headache and fever and chills.
Oh, no.
So this is the next day. So she wakes up not feeling well. She has to stay in bed most of the day. And Bridget didn't get better quickly. She was in bed and sick throughout the week. And so when Michael wasn't working, he was home taking care of his wife. He wasn't sleeping very much. His time was spent working and then probably trying to run the household with her sick and then take care of her. Bridget's cousin, Joanna Burke, did stop by to see Bridget, and she ended up helping out. And I did read at one point that she said that Bridget apparently said something to Joanna about, you know, oh, I got sick after I passed the fairy fort. So I wonder if maybe she connected the things, if she was thinking, oh, maybe that's why I'm sick. Maybe I made them mad. I don't know. They didn't really go into it, but she did possibly mention the fairy fort to Johanna. Her dad's cousin, Jack Dunn, who she was taking the eggs to, he stopped by to see Bridget as well. And as soon as he saw her, he claimed, that's not Bridgie Boland. Boland was her maiden name. But apparently Jack immediately thought, that's not Bridget. She's a changeling. And
oh, dear.
Yes. So
even though she's an adult, even though she's 18, this was still possible.
Well, she was older than 18.
Okay.
At the time. But they do go after
adults.
It's not as common as children, but they do go after adults. So,
okay.
Yeah, he sees her and kind of right off the bat is like, that's not Bridgie Boland. That's a changeling left in her place. So this seems kind of like the first little seed that's planted, and Michael took note of it. So, you know, up until this point, he really is just, he's taking care of his sick wife. He doesn't really seem to me to think that it's anything more than that. He's working, he's taking care of her, trying to help her get better. But by Saturday, when Bridget wasn't better, her dad, Patrick, actually walked 5 miles into town to get the doctor and then come, you know, to have the doctor come to their house. The doctor's name was William Crean. He said he would come, but he never showed up. So on Monday, it's a week after Bridget got caught in the rain, Michael this time walked 5 miles into town to try and get the doctor to come out. And again, the doctor said, yep, I'll come out today. He never showed up. So again, seriously, like, you have a sick woman. So again, on Wednesday, Michael, who is extremely frustrated, I'm sure at this point, and probably worried about his wife and tired, he walks again 5 miles back to town to be like, if I keep bothering you, you'll come. And so
I was like, I'm not going home until you come with me. I will be your shadow until you follow me home.
So the doctor promises, okay, fine, I'll come out this afternoon. That was odd. Oh, it's the fairies. The
hell happened. Maybe it is. Oh my God, we pissed him off by laughing at him. I'm telling you.
Okay, I'm going to mention that just because I think it's funny.
Okay, yeah. Our podcast stopped recording midway through, so we had to start again.
And then Dana's mic went wonky and
crazy haywire.
It's the
so
fairies.
If there's a slight audio difference between in this episode and you guys notice that's what happened. We somehow got cut off mid-episode and we had to start again.
It's the fairies.
Oh my gosh.
We have made the fairies mad.
Probably. You did because the one that went to the fairy ring. Well, I don't think we have fairy rings or fairy mounds around here.
You don't be so sure. Sorry, fairies. I'm so sorry. So before walking back to town, Michael stops and he ends up getting a pouch of medicinal herbs to take to Bridget because at this point he's probably just really fed up with the fact that he cannot get a doctor to come and his wife just keeps getting sicker. So he's going to help out his wife in some way himself. Also at this time on the same day, the Clearys neighbor, William Simpson, sent out for the local priest to come and give Bridget her last rites, which is apparently normal to do. It doesn't necessarily mean that they thought she was going to die, but it seems like just a just in case type of thing. Like you're all set just in case, which I mean, I can't imagine what that would have felt like for Bridget. You know, what is that going to do mentally to be like, okay, the priest is here and he's giving me my last rites. So I can't imagine it's going to be good for her. But I also find it very interesting that the man who sent for the priest was William Simpson, and he was the one that Bridget was accused of having an affair with.
Oh.
So I know this is a small town and everyone in this story especially just kind of seems to like know that Bridget's sick and come to see her. So I don't know if he was just concerned or what. I just find it odd that it was him who called the priest to give her the last rites. Maybe he figured since Michael was gone, he would do it. I don't know why her dad wouldn't have done it. I don't know. But when Michael gets home, the priest is still there giving the last rites, which that's got to be a shock to Michael. And also Jack Dunn is there along with Bridget's cousin, Johanna. The Dark Histories podcast did bring up a good point where they said, you know, what did this do to Michael mentally to see like his wife's not improving and now they're giving her last rites? Like, what did that do to him? And also, the doctor finally had come to the house when Michael was gone getting those medicinal herbs, and he diagnosed Bridget with mild bronchitis, but wasn't concerned. He gave some medicine to Michael, and he said later when he left, he wasn't really concerned that it was anything more than bronchitis and she would, you know, make a turn and feel better. But it seems like Michael didn't give her the medicine from the doctor and kind of wasn't interested in what the doctor said. So I think at that point he had pretty much just lost faith of the doctor in general. And instead he decided to give her the herbs that he had got himself. Bridget ended up telling Johanna, her cousin, during one of these times as he's like mixing the herbs together at the fire. She says to Johanna that Michael was, quote, making a fairy out of me. So she's at least kind of aware that like there's some talk about her being a changeling and she's possibly picking up on some odd behavior from her husband. So she's aware of it.
Oh,
it's basically kind of like he's trying to make me out to be a fairy and I'm not. I'm just sick.
Yeah.
But Johanna just kind of pushes it away and is like, don't worry about things like that right now. But it was the same night that Jack Dunn sits down with Michael and talks to him. And he tells him he's suspicious that Bridget is not Bridget, that she is a changeling, and a changeling has been left in her place. He tells Michael he needs to go see a man named Dennis Ganay. Ganay is a fairy doctor, and Jack Dunn says he's going to be able to help you. He also tells Michael that apparently there's like a, when you suspect that someone has been taken by a changeling, you have like 5 days to get help. There's like a time limit. They're already at like day 11 at this point.
Oh.
So he's like, you need to go now. So obviously that's, you know, that's probably on Michael's mind. Like he thinks I'm almost out of time on this.
My coupon expired.
Yeah. Michael does go to visit this Dr. Gane, and he mixes, he gives him some herbs, and he gives him some milk from the first milk of a cow who has just had a calf.
That's cool.
Telling him that if you give these to Bridget, it's going to fix the problem. He also gives Michael kind of instructions and almost like a ritual that needs to be performed when administering these herbs. So just kind of to show how focused Michael was on this now, and like very much focused on the fact that he believed his wife was taken by the fairies, he gets word as he's walking home that his dad has died. Like that day, geez. His dad died, and there's going to be a wake that night. But Michael says, I'm not going to the wake because I have to get my wife back. So it's his dad. And he's,
wow.
Yes, he's very much like, no, I don't have time for that. I have to get my wife back. She's a changeling. When Michael, before he left to go to the doctor that day, he had actually passed a couple people in town and asked them to go check in on Bridget. Just go look in on her. I believe one of these was her aunt, actually, Mary Kennedy. So he gets back to the house and there's all these people there. And I kind of think there was a reason why he was telling people to go look in on her. I think because he knew he needed people for what he was going to do. So when he gets back to the Cleary house, there are 9 people there. There's Michael Cleary. He gets back. Bridget's father, Patrick Boland, is there. Her aunt, Mary Kennedy, that I just mentioned. Mary's 4 children. So these would be Bridget's cousins. Patrick, Michael, James, and William Kennedy. Her dad's cousin, Jack Dunn, and then a man named William Ahern. And then the neighbors, William and Minnie Simpson, and her cousin, Johanna Burke, are coming to the house. They are on their way.
Wow.
So there's a group there.
Everybody's coming.
Michael was boiling the herbs he received from Gane in the new milk from the cow in the fireplace. He then tried to get Bridget to take the mixture, but she resisted because she said, it doesn't taste good. I don't want it. So yeah. He tries to force it down her throat.
Oh, God.
And at this point, the neighbors, the Simpsons and Johanna Burke, they are approaching the house and they get there, but the door is locked, but they can hear shouting inside and they hear, quote, take it, you old witch, or I'll kill you.
Oh, my God.
Possibly that. The word witch was not used, but another word that sounds like witch, but starts with a B. It's one of the two. Also shouted was, quote, away she go, away she go. So then suddenly the door to the house swings open, shocking the people outside. And Michael is standing there in the doorway. But he seemed surprised to see them, too. And he says, I wasn't opening the door for you. I'm opening the door to let all the fairies out. So things are taking a weird turn. And
yeah,
the house at this point is in chaos.
Yeah.
I will tell you what this makes me think of later.
Another
story we've covered. An exorcism and also the tomahawk ritual sacrifice.
Yeah. Very and a little much. Bit Salem witch trials, because you yes. just look at somebody and say you're a fairy in the same way that people will look at somebody and say you're a witch, and then there's not much proof or yeah. any proof, and then people run with it.
It's starting to feel very much like a mass hysteria type of situation.
Yeah.
And the house is in chaos. So Bridget's dad, Patrick, he's sitting in the kitchen just by himself doing nothing. Bridget's being held down by her cousins and Jack Dunn in her bed. The man named William Ahern and Bridget's Aunt Mary are standing around with candles for some reason. I don't really know what. I don't know if they're like prepared to use fire on her.
With a ritual or something?
Yeah. Bridget is resisting the herb and milk concoction as Michael is trying to force it down her throat. She doesn't want it. It doesn't taste good. He's yeah. screaming at her to answer if she was Bridget Boland, the wife of Michael Cleary. She wouldn't answer him. She just kept telling him, like, this does not taste good. I don't want it. Michael had tried 3 times to get her to drink the herbal milk. And then what he does next, he grabs a hot poker from the fireplace.
No.
He shoves it toward her face, holds it like in front of her face because fairies don't like fire.
Yeah.
And if that's not bad enough, you know, he kind of threatens her with that. And if that's not bad enough, you know, he's doing this to a poor woman who is sick and probably weak and needs actual medicine. Michael and Jack Dunn mix urine and hen's feces together and throw it into Bridget's face several times. Oh, God. Times. Yes, I told you. It gets bad. It's bad. And no one helped. They're all these people who are there, mostly her family, they're all standing there. They are yelling at her. They're yelling for Bridget Boland to come back. They're threatening her with fire. And Bridget is struggling and trying, like, plus she's sick and probably weak and doesn't feel good. And all these people are yelling at her. So she finally yells, yes, I'm Bridget Boland.
Get the hell out of my house. Yeah.
She finally yells, like, yes, I'm Bridget Boland. She answers their question and the men seem satisfied. So they take her back to her bed. I guess they had taken her out of her bed at that point. I think they took her toward the fire, where the fireplace. The ritual had to be completed that night before midnight. And it was completed in their eyes just in time at 11:30. If it hadn't, the men believed that Bridget would just be forever gone to the fairies. But I guess they were satisfied that she had answered their questions and that she was. I was confused if they thought, okay, she is Bridget Cleary, or if they thought, okay, the changeling is gone. I think it was to determine, like, if she was actually Bridget Cleary. That part wasn't as.
It seems like instead of forcing this milk and herb concoction down my throat, just ask me my name first or do the eggshell trick.
Yes.
You got plenty of eggs laying around. Like, can't you just do that?
Yeah. Well, he went whatever that doctor had told him to do, that's what Michael was doing. So
this is like an exorcism.
Made me definitely think of exorcisms. Out of control. Very out of control. But either way, everyone seemed good, happy with themselves that, you know, this was really Bridget. And she's still sick, by the way. She still hasn't got real medicine. And she's pretty much laying in bed, like, moaning and talking to herself because she's just been tortured. Her aunt and her cousin thankfully help her get clean clothes on because she's had urine and feces thrown on her.
Ugh.
And then Michael, her husband, he stands there and he makes her name every single man in the room to prove once again that she really is Bridget.
Oh God.
So she does it. And Michael's like, okay, cool. You can all leave. Go to my dad's wake that I'm not going to go to. But oh, tell them my wife is back. I have her back. Awesome work, guys. Like,
awesome work, guys.
You know, maybe leave out the part where I threw pee and poop on her. But
yeah. Otherwise, what else can we ask her?
We did a really good job. So. But things did not get better at all. It seems at this point, Michael was very unhinged. It almost seems to me like he definitely reached a breaking point. So the next day he goes to the local priest and he asks him to come back to the house because he says there's evil spirits all over the house and I need you to come say mass. So clearly he's not thinking things are back to normal. He's not okay. The priest comes to the house, says mass, gives communion to Bridget, saying that there wasn't really anything weird about her except that she had a, quote, wild and excited look because she's probably traumatized from what had happened to her before. She's probably not trusting people very much. But by that night, Bridget actually was starting to feel a little better, which I kind of wonder, I'm like, was she feeling better or was she just like, I have got to get up and act like I'm feeling good because these people are nuts and are going to come at me again. But
it could be a little bit of an adrenaline rush from everything happening to her where her body is just like in survival mode. Mm-hmm. And you know how sometimes people like will feel sick or be injured and they just have like a burst of strength or something that just like push through or power through for just a few minutes.
Yeah. I do wonder if she had turned the corner and she was fine because she never really got real medicine. She got some herbs. Yeah. Maybe there was something in the herbs that helped her feel better.
Maybe it was just like the adrenaline and the brain chemical drugs just kicking in overdrive just for self-preservation.
Or she's like, I better put on a show and act like I'm totally fine.
And the Oscar goes to?
So she did get up. She got up. She got herself dressed. And eventually her aunt, her cousins, and some grandchildren, they come over to the Cleary house. So once again, it's a full house at this point. There's a lot of people in. Bridget comes downstairs, and according to the podcast I listened to by Finn Dwyer on this case from Irish Histories, people started talking about fairies as soon as she walks downstairs. And can you imagine probably how that felt for Bridget? She's just been through hell. She's sick, couldn't get a doctor to see her. Her husband thinks she's not her, tries to shove, you know, this milk and herb mix down her throat, threatens her with a fire poker, holds her down, throws urine and poop on her, and then tells her to answer questions over and over. So, and then she comes downstairs and they're talking about fairies again. So it's not a surprise that Bridget gets kind of annoyed at this.
Yeah.
And kind of maybe smarts off a little bit to Michael.
And of course, that's a sudden mood change.
He snaps. He snaps. And he demands, this is going to sound weird, but he demands she drink tea and eat 3 pieces of toast with jam while answering questions. She's got to answer these questions again while she's eating this toast. So
it sounds like he's the one present, like he's the changeling that's having all these mood swings.
Possessed by a demon. So Bridget eats 2 pieces of toast and answers these questions, but then she says she doesn't want the third one.
She's probably full. When you're sick, sometimes you don't want to eat. You have no appetite.
Michael flipped, and it hits the fan. He tells her if she's not going to eat it, he's going to put her down. And he's just like asking her the same questions over and over. This gets rough. This is just bad. He throws Bridget to the ground. He tries to force the bread down her throat. Bridget is begging him, you know, let me answer. But he is just like complete mental break at this point. He places a knee on her chest and rips off part of her nightgown. And then he grabs a burning log from the fireplace, threatening to shove it down her throat.
Oh my God.
One of the burning embers falls off onto Bridget's clothes and it goes up in flames.
Oh God.
Michael does not help. He gets up, he grabs the oil lamp and throws the oil on her body.
Oh my God.
Igniting her even more. This is like in front of the fireplace in her house. Her cousins, Patrick and James, they're in the house. They are like sleeping in another room at this point. They hear what's happening. They run in, see Michael. The only thing they do is yell at him, "You can't burn your wife." But like, they don't do anything to stop him, and that's not going to stop him. Michael tells him it wasn't his wife. It never was. She had been lying to them the whole time. Just wait and see. They'll see her go up the chimney. So he's thinking that this is a changeling and she's just going to go away and he'll get his wife back. Michael would not let anyone leave. He locks the door. He threatens them with a knife. He says no one is going to go until Bridget comes back. So everyone just kind of like locks themselves in other rooms and sits there while Bridget is burning to death in front of the fireplace.
He's a psycho.
He is.
Did he have a mental break of or something?
We'll talk a little bit about some theories about what some people think happened. But I guess Michael left soon after this. Bridget was dead at this point in the house.
Burnt. Oh, poor woman.
He comes back and he tells Patrick Kennedy, her cousin, that Patrick is going to help bury Bridget's body. You're going to help me do this. And then Michael says after that, he's going to go back to the fairy fort that Bridget passed when she went to go drop off her eggs. And he's going to wait 2 days and 2 nights for her to come riding on a gray horse, where he would then cut her down and he would have his wife back.
Oh my God. That's very specific, by the way.
Jack Dunn, good old Jack Dunn that I have thoughts over.
He kind of started the whole thing.
Started the whole freaking thing by not showing up to get his eggs in the first place. I'm like, you set this whole thing in motion.
You just would have had
your
eggs.
Appointments. Otherwise, and then she went and had to walk home in the rain and she went and got sick. So after all of this happens, her cousin Johanna Burke, I believe it was a couple days after all this happens, she ends up going to the police, but she doesn't give them the full story. She just tells them that Bridget is missing. She doesn't tell them anything about the fairy ritual, tells them nothing. I can't remember if she was at the house that night. She knows more than she's saying. And then the neighbor, William Simpson, he also goes to the police and he's the one to tell them about this fairy ritual that happens on the 14th. So the first ritual that happens where they throw the stuff on her and everything.
Yeah.
Not the one that resulted in her death. But he's, you know, talks about Bridget being forced to drink milk and herbs and the hot poker and all of it. But he wasn't there the night that she was set on fire. So he, as far as I know, he doesn't really know anything about mm-hmm. what happened to her that night. He just thinks that she's missing. I think he's probably concerned about what's going on. Because of all of this, 10 people are actually taken into custody and charged with, quote, ill treatment of Bridget and causing her actual bodily harm. And at this point, they don't know that she's dead. They don't know about her being burned. They know nothing. They just know that she was hurt and harmed in some way. And now she's missing. Possibly like she left on her own. She ran away, something. So they just want to get answers from these people. So Michael Cleary is arrested along with her father, Patrick, Jack Dunn, cousins Michael, Patrick, James, and William Kennedy, her aunt, Mary Kennedy, William Ahern, and then the fairy doctor, Dennis Ginnay. Wow. They're all taken
in. They go after everybody.
Later, Johanna would be taken in and charged as well, but she wasn't at this roundup. They're taken to the town hall in Clonmel, and we're told that they could ask questions about the charges if they had any questions about it. So the only thing Michael Cleary would say was he didn't ill-treat his wife. And I believe at this point, he really, truly believed that. I think in his mind, he thought it was a changeling and he would get his wife back. Patrick Boland, her father, would only say, I have nothing to say about my daughter. He's not saying anything.
He's pleading the fifth before the fifth was even a thing in a different country.
Michael tried to throw the fairy doctor Ginnay under the bus. And he pretty much said the only ill treatment that happened was because of the herbs and the ritual that Ginnay had told him to do. And the fairy doctor is pretty much just like, was I at the house? Did Michael see me at the house?
Who set her on fire? You or me? Just so saying.
He's basically like, I was not there. If he says I was there, he lies. I wasn't there. I didn't have anything to do with it. So yes, he did have this ritual, but it's like we have free will. Michael chose to do this to his wife. So I do at this point wonder how aware Michael was of stuff, because he is trying to blame other people. So I go back and forth. Like I just said, I thought that he truly believed that she was a changeling, but then he's throwing the doctor under the bus. So
maybe he was trying to get rid of her all along and is using this as an excuse.
I have some theories about what I think happened. A couple of theories. The cousin, Michael Kennedy, he says, I was only there for a few minutes. I don't even know why I've been arrested. So all these people are just like, they don't even want to talk. And everyone is told, you are going to be held in custody until Bridget is found. But no one will say anything. They'll just say she went away. So they're trying to make it seem like she just left, walked away. Or they're trying to say she was a fairy.
This is so weird.
I know.
You think that many people, some people would turn on Michael or somebody else. That's why are you all sticking together?
Because I really wonder who believed and who didn't.
Yeah.
Like who, and we'll talk about it a little more at the end about, I have some thoughts on it. On March 22nd, in a shallow grave on a farm close to her home, the burned body of Bridget Cleary was discovered. And the next day, a coroner's inquest determined that obviously, she had died by the burning and died from the shock soon after the burning started. They said no one could survive being burned like that.
No.
But the story of the fairy ritual hadn't come out at this point. But there were stories that ran that called it a witch burning. And newspapers would refer to it as the witchcraft case, the witch burning, and the Irish witch case. And there was... It seemed like an editorial type of piece that ran in the New York Times, and it addressed the story about Bridget being burned as a witch. And it's, I'm going to quote what the writer says. This is, quote, an Irish correspondent of the London Spectator writes to inform the readers of that paper that the English papers seem to have missed the real point of that horrible chapter in the history of superstition, the murder of Mrs. Cleary in County Tipperary. She did not fall victim to the belief in witchcraft or in the demoniacal possession. Neither has any real hold in Ireland. She perished owing to the beliefs in the fairies. End quote.
Oh, okay.
At the end of March, a story ran about the Tipperary fairies. And everything started to come out about what happened in the Cleary House. And this story goes global. It goes all around the world. And there are papers in the United States to start running the story of Bridget Cleary being burned alive because of fairies. And remember, at this time, there's a lot of Irish living in the United States. Mm-hmm. And some are from the area that Bridget lived in, County Tipperary. But many of them didn't believe at first that these were even true. For one, the original story spelled the name wrong of the city. They didn't call it Ballyvadley. They like misspelled it or something. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the Irish who were living abroad, they were like, well, this isn't true because that place doesn't even exist. Like, that's not a place. So it's not true. But
people
also
make spelling mistakes a lot, though. So
yeah,
it's not like they had spell check back then.
But also, a lot of these stories were printed in English papers, and it made them not believe because it was very typical for the Irish, especially the rural Irish, to be smeared and depicted as heathen and barbarian by English papers, because the Irish, I mentioned this earlier, they wanted home rule. So they wanted independence from England, which England didn't want. So a lot of Irish saw this story and thought, this is just an attempt at the English to print the story to show that we are savage and we can't take care of ourselves. So they kind of saw it as this like smear campaign.
Yeah.
But as more details started to come out, the name of the city and county were corrected. You know, details were coming out about the area that a lot of them knew. They started to realize like, oh, this is all true. And this is what happened to Bridget Cleary. But the most heartbreaking to me is that Bridget was buried at night in the dark, and no one but a few police officers came to her funeral.
Oh,
no family, no one from town came, no one came. And
her family's all in jail.
But like, you think of how well known she was in town. Like, everyone knew who she was and no one came. And that's because they think a lot of people believe that she had been a changeling, and that, well, Bridget Cleary isn't dead. That's the changeling that was killed, and she'll come back. So no one came, and she was buried at night next to her mom, and that was the end of it.
I wonder if her gravesite is still,
yes,
like if people still know where it is today.
I did find a picture of it.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. I found on like Find Graves or something.
Yeah, so, Find a Grave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if we ever go to Ireland, we should go find it. Which
we should.
This makes
we
me want to go to Ireland.
Like an offering.
We'll leave something for her. Not saying she's a fairy. She was not a fairy. She was a human woman.
Oh, one that got treated horribly by her husband.
By her whole family.
And everybody else. Exactly.
Legal proceedings for Bridget's murder started April 1st, 1895. There were 9 defendants. 5 of them. So Michael Cleary, Bridget's dad, her Aunt Mary, her cousin James, and Patrick Kennedy, they were all indicted for murder. Other ones were like ill treatment, so they had kind of lesser charges. The neighbor, William Simpson, was the first to testify at the hearing, and he spoke about the fairy ritual on the night of March 14th, the day before Bridget was killed. And he says no one stopped Michael from what he was doing to Bridget. The priest who had come to give Bridget her last rites, he spoke about seeing Michael the day after the murder at church. And he said Michael was very excited and in like a really nervous state. He was like, pulling his hair out. He was acting crazy and saying like he wanted to go to confession. So he was acting like something happened and kept asking like, can I be forgiven? He was acting so out of it that the priest was like, I'm not seeing you for confession. Like, you have
to. Oh, my God. Priest was like, you know, it's bad.
This was also, I found it odd. This was also when he was supposed to be waiting at the ferry for her to come back. So I felt that was odd. Like, you're at church. Aren't you supposed to be waiting for your wife to come back?
Yeah. Maybe he really didn't believe it.
It's a question. So the priest takes him outside. He sees Bridget's cousin, Michael Kennedy, and he kind of like gets Michael over to him and takes him away. Priest also saw Jack Dunn that day and asked Jack, like, what is going on with Michael Cleary? What's happening? Jack tells him that Michael had burned Bridget alive the night before and buried her. And he says, we've all been asking him all morning to dig her up and bury her properly. Sure. Sure.
Okay.
So,
I mean, couldn't you just do it yourself if you want? Yeah.
But the priest is like, holy crap. Like, I don't think he even believed it. I think he thought, no way could all these people snap at one time. Like, I don't think he really believed it, but I think he thought like maybe Michael believed it and was kind of out of control. So he goes to the police and he tells them Michael Cleary was, quote, off his head. And I don't think he really knows what to make of it. And then the neighbor, Mary Simpson, said that she was the one, she saw Jack Dunn put Bridget by the fireplace during the fairy ritual. So like placing her near the fire. Mm-hmm. There was also a shovel that was submitted into evidence. It was from the Cleary's house. And it was decided that the hand of the shovel smelled like lamp oil. Like someone who had lamp oil on their hands had used the shovel. Michael Cleary's clothing was presented with oil on it. And Jack Dunn basically said, yep, I was there, but he didn't say anything about fairies, nothing about changelings. He didn't say anything about the fact that he told Michael to go to this fairy doctor, nothing. He like really distanced himself from that, which I find interesting because he's the one that kind of started all of it. The grand jury decides there's enough evidence to go forward with the trial. This is a super fast trial, like a day.
Wow.
Michael Cleary, his trial begins July 4th, 1895. He pleads guilty. Everyone else, Patrick Bullen, Mary Kennedy, Jack Dunn, William Ahern, whose charges were eventually dropped, cousins Michael James Patrick William Kennedy, all stood trial for unlawfully and maliciously wounding Bridget Cleary. They entered pleas of not guilty. Mm-hmm. Trial lasted only a day. And the jury received the case on July 5th. It took them 40 minutes to return a verdict, and it was guilty for everyone.
Good.
Patrick Kennedy, her father, was sentenced to 6 months hard labor with prison time. Mary Kennedy was actually never sentenced and was sent home because of her age. So she was found guilty, but they just said, go home. It doesn't say. I would say she was probably like between 50 and 60.
Okay, that's weird.
Yeah. She just goes home.
Also, so commit crimes when you're old. That's
And then you won't, nothing will happen.
That's the thing.
I wonder too if it's because she's a woman.
Yeah, that's what I was going to wonder because, yeah.
Do the crime, do the time, Mary Kennedy.
I know, that's not right. I don't care if you're man or woman. No. Killing people and standing around while other people kill people is not right.
I don't know what happened, how Michael Kennedy, her cousin, was sentenced, but he was found guilty. Bridget's cousin and one of Mary's son, Patrick Kennedy, was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Jack Dunn got 3 years in prison. Cousins William and James Kennedy received 18 months in prison. And Michael Cleary was sentenced to 20 years in prison. And the judge pretty much like threw down on him and made him feel guilty. Like, you are going to feel guilt for the rest of your life, and then you're going to die, and you're going to be punished by God. So,
okay.
Michael spent 15 years in prison and was released on April 28th, 1910. He eventually immigrated to Canada 3 months after his release, and no one knows what happened to him after that.
Okay.
Bridget's murder is sometimes referred to as the last witch burned in Ireland, even though she was not a witch. Yeah. And but they kind of like talk about it like it's the end of the witch trials. As far as like public opinion of all of this, there were some people who thought that the convicted family members really did believe that Bridget was a changeling and that they didn't mean to murder her. And they really thought what they were doing was right. A writer named E.F. Benson, he wrote about the case, and he pointed to the fact that apparently the door to the Cleary home was left open during this whole ritual. And he says, you know, someone who knows what they're doing is wrong is not going to leave the door open and draw attention to themselves. So they clearly thought what they were doing was fine, which I think is kind of a weak argument.
Yeah, that's not accurate at all.
No. There have been some, you know, I think it's important we look at like what's going on socially of even just causing like anxiety and the changing times and how the landscape shifted. Like, I think that's important to look at as well. You know, some of these beliefs kind of going by the wayside, and maybe the panic of change, you know, kind of makes people hold on tighter to some of these beliefs. I think that's a possibility. There were some psychiatric explanations regarding at least Michael. there was one put forth by two people. One was known as H. O'Connell and the other P.G. Doyle in 2006. They believed that Michael had a brief psychotic disorder that manifested as something called Capgras syndrome. I think that's how you pronounce it. So I looked it up on healthline.com, and it's known also as imposter syndrome or Capgras delusion. So it's this irrational belief that someone you know is not actually that person, and they've been replaced by an imposter. So it's almost this like obsessive thought that starts. Like if I start looking at you and I'm like, that's not Dana, that's a demon. And I keep thinking that, like, that's what they think happened with Michael, that he was so stressed with caring for Bridget and running around back and forth, going to the doctor, worried about his wife, that he kind of snapped and had this little seed planted in his head that she's a changeling.
And then his dad died.
And it like, just spiraled.
Right when all this was going on.
You know, his dad, and that kind of reinforces what's happened. You know, I do think, I wouldn't be surprised if Michael believed in fairies and fairy forts and changelings, but
yeah.
It seemed like he started out really just trying to take care of his sick wife. And if it wasn't for Jack Dunn, who planted that seed, that it might have been fine. But Jack Dunn comes in and says, you know, that's not Bridgie Boland. And then even though she's diagnosed with bronchitis, Michael's still like, I don't believe you. I'm going to the fairy doctor. So he kind of gets lost in all of this. And like you said, his dad died suddenly. That probably pushed him over an edge. And then
he had a mental break,
but also thinking back to, you know, when his mother-in-law died, being that was blamed on the fairies.
Yeah.
They don't have any kids and we don't know the reason for that, but everyone kept saying it was because of the fairies. No one wanted to buy their home that they lived in because it was near a fairy fort. So I think all this kind of just spirals and he ends up just completely going over the edge. And Jack Dunn kind of helps him along. He plants that seed and then he's like, oh, ignore what they're saying about bronchitis. You need to actually go see this doctor and take care of it. You know, it's common. I would say it's common every day for people to feel like they've had some kind of contact with a fairy. That seems normal, but a changeling kind of seems like a whole other level. Yeah. So it seems like it just really got out of hand. And I think that, so my opinion is that like he was handling it like a normal husband and then everything spiraled. Jack Dunn plants that seed and he just goes out of control. What do you think?
I think it sounds like the mental break happened. It's like they're down on their luck. And didn't you say that some changelings, if they grow into adulthood, he just brings bad luck all around.
Mm-hmm.
And if they haven't been having good luck lately, that's exactly where he could see it from.
Mm-hmm.
Just blaming her. But yeah, it's just he's got a lot going on right now. And I think his dad dying too may have affected him a little more. And like you said, we don't know why they didn't have children. We don't know why they lived apart early, like throughout a lot, large part of their marriage or anything like that. But maybe he blamed her for something if they wanted to have children and couldn't or didn't. I don't know, but that's only speculation. But yeah, it sounds like it was a mental break. But it seems to me that if he really truly believed that fairies were the cause of this, that he wouldn't have entered a guilty plea.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's just kind of like, well, okay, I'll just enter a guilty plea because I'm not going to fight for my fairy theory.
A part of me wonders if when the fog cleared, he realized what he did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was almost like he had convinced himself that she was to justify what he had done to her and was doing to her. And even after she died, it was like, well, I have to go now wait for her to come back. Mm-hmm. And then I think maybe there was time that passed and maybe that's what we saw when he goes to the church where he realizes like, you know, he wakes
reality
up the next
in.
Day and is like, oh my gosh, my wife is gone. And he realizes what he did.
Even if he believed it, nobody in the room was like, dude, like, calm down, hold him back. Like, just give her a minute.
That's what I wonder. I try to put my mind in a time where people really believe that this happened. And I think, did you all really believe that she was a changeling and thought that it would pay off in the end, that she would come back? Was it, I don't want to get in the middle of this. Like, yeah. I don't want to, it's a very patriarchal, I don't want to get involved, society. Like, I'm not going to get between a husband and wife. Like, I'm going to let him do whatever he's going to do to his wife. It's their marriage. It's whatever. Like, her dad didn't even do anything. Her dad.
But also, if you
back.
Have the front door open and then you invite the whole town in to watch you do this fairy ritual or do whatever it is you're supposed to do, then.
Yeah, no, I think
involved.
At the time, he
I mean, they're inviting
thought,
you in.
Yeah. And I think at that time, Michael legit thought what he was doing was true, but they come in. But on the, and he gets full credit for this, the podcast, the Irish History Podcast, Finn Dwyer, he brought up a really good point I never thought of, was that Bridget's lifestyle was very different than what was expected of a woman mm-hmm. back then. She was very independent. She worked for herself. Did some of these people want to humiliate her and knock her down a few pegs? Yeah, they're mm-hmm. family, but were they jealous of her? Did they think, we'll knock her around a little bit, kind of bring her down, like, we'll humiliate her? And then it got completely out of hand.
Oh, God, it's like secret jealousy.
Beyond what anybody could do. And by that point, Michael was just, no one was going to stop him at that point. Was it something like that?
It's like seeing the school bully pick on some smaller kid and everybody else is like, yeah, the kid's a little nerdy. And they just kind of like let the bully do it because mm-hmm. nobody's going to, they could stop him if they wanted, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
I think after reality set in too for Michael, that's probably why he went to live in Canada right after his release and you don't hear from him anymore. He was probably embarrassed and ashamed.
And probably couldn't go back to.
Yeah, there's no way he could go back to where he lived. Yeah, no way.
He should feel guilty. He did that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he murdered his wife.
It's awful that he had that if he had a mental break, that there was no one there to even help him and kind of pull him back, that he was kind of pushed along as well with this. And, but I mean, with everybody failed Bridget, I mean, even her dad didn't do anything.
God, I can't believe her dad just sat there at the table and didn't say anything.
Which makes me wonder, did he believe it? Like, I wonder how deep those beliefs ran. Like, do they run deep enough where you can watch your daughter get abused and it's okay because you think that there's a reason for it? I don't know. I think if anybody in the group like truly believed, I feel like it was Jack Dunn. But
yeah.
But he still distanced himself in the trial to be like, didn't say anything about fairies. So I think at some point, even in his mind, he realized that totally crossed the line.
Yeah, he started it.
So that's the story of Fairy Changelings and Bridget Cleary.
Wow, poor Bridget.
I know.
That's tragic.
I know. Really quick, I forgot to do my sources. I kind of talked about them throughout, but the Dark Histories podcast, Irish Histories podcast with Finn Dwyer, Wikipedia was great. IrishCentral.com, the New York Times, EmeraldIsle.ie, and GoToIreland.com. Those were all cool websites.
Nice.
Do you want to hear quickly about a couple Irish creepy stories?
Okay.
Yeah.
Always.
I'm very lucky that at least one part of my family, the Hunt side of my family, my great uncle Pete actually wrote a book about that side, talking about my great-grandpa and my great-grandma, so his mom and dad, and their life in Ireland, and then moving over here, immigrating over here, their life over here, meeting, what they did. Like, he wrote a book on it, so I'm really lucky that, like, I have that. He gave books to all of us in the family, so I'm
That's
lucky
an incredible
that
piece of family history.
It's, like, I right have there. It sitting on my table right now. I had it out yesterday looking, but every once in a while, I grab it and I read it because it's so cool. Like, I'm so interested in where I come from, and to be able to have that, like, there's pictures and there's death certificates, marriage certificates. Just to know a little bit about my family. Like, I didn't realize before I had read what he wrote that my great grandma was actually born in the US. So she was Irish, but she was born in the United States in Brooklyn. And then her father died suddenly in a building collapse. And so my great-great-grandma moved everyone back to Ireland. And my great-grandma was only a couple months old, I think. So moved her back, everyone back to Ireland, and ran her own little goods store, like, out of her home.
Oh, nice.
And that's still standing today.
Really?
So, I mean, it's owned by the family. They use it right. just like... But, like, I went and saw my mom's family in Wexford, Ireland when I was studying abroad, and I got to see like the quote homestead that my great grandparents were on, and like the building is still there. My family owns. So I'm very lucky. I know about that side, but like my dad was even luckier that his grandpa Peter, so my great grandpa Peter, lived with them in their home until he died in the 70s. He came over from Ireland in 1915. He was the 14th of 16 children.
Wow.
And yeah, some came over here, some stayed in Ireland. We still have that family over there. My great great grandpa sent his sons over because he didn't want them to fight for the English in World War I. So he was like, my kids are not fighting for the English, so I'm sending you to America. They ended up fighting for us in World War I.
Oh my God.
But it helped them get their citizenship. So my dad always talked about having memories of relatives coming over to the house with my grandpa, like to see my grandfather, Irish relatives, and like my grandparents were there, and they would just like sit around the kitchen table and talk, and which I kind of experienced when I was over in Ireland. I think it's like, it's just a very Irish thing, but he has so many of those memories, and he talks about, you know, my great grandfather had a very thick Irish accent, and then the family that would come over would have a very thick Irish accent, couldn't understand half of what they said. So I asked him, I was like, I texted him yesterday and he called because I'm like, this is going to be so confusing. I'm texting my dad about fairies and changelings. I told him it was for the podcast. So he called and he said he did actually remember a family member. Her name was Tressa. She was my grandma's cousin. She talked about fairies. He didn't remember specific stories, but he remembers her sitting around talking about the fairies. And then my dad also remembered being in Sligo, which is where my dad's family is from. They were back there. I think they were there in 2005, 2006, visiting. And he remembers someone talking about someone who had recently passed away. So a friend of our family had passed away like a couple years before. And there had been this sighting of a white horse, and it was like a signal. I think it was seen like as like a signal or an omen that this person was going to die, and then they
died. Death comes on a pale horse.
But also, the horse is in the lore of the fairies, of you come riding back on a horse released by the fairies, and then you're cut down from your saddle. So he remembered that. He couldn't remember. He was supposed to text me. My aunt was going to come over. He was going to ask her, but I haven't heard from him. But he also remembered Tressa, who I did actually get to meet, her and her husband. Tressa was a nurse, and she claimed to be sitting next to a dying patient at one point, and she heard the shriek of the banshee right before this person died. Yeah. Yeah, she used to talk about hearing the banshee, apparently. Yeah.
Oh,
which is another really cool story. But
banshees freaked me out ever since Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Did you see that movie?
No.
Oh my God, it's an older movie. It's got Sean Connery in it. He sings, like, it's pretty good. But they have a banshee, and this guy's screaming about this banshee, and it's really creepy. I saw this movie when I was little, and you know how some of those older movies are when like the graphics are not that great compared to today's standards, but they're creepy.
Yeah. Well, she apparently heard the banshee right before this patient died that she was sitting with. But two of my favorite stories, and then I'll be done. They don't have anything to do with fairies, but I think that they're awesome. And it was one of these with my dad remembers my great-grandpa talking about this story. And he said that he was with his brothers. He was in England. So it makes me think that possibly it was before he was coming over here, because they left on a ship in Liverpool to come to the States. But he said that they were in England. They had rented a room, and they were all traveling with those big wooden chests that people, that was a suitcase back then. My dad remembers this chest being in my grandpa's apartment in their house. All of them had it. So the brothers were all going out drinking that night, but my great grandpa didn't want to go. So he said he was just going to stay behind in the room. He said at one point it was dark, and he all of a sudden just felt scared. He got scared all of a sudden. And then right after that, he heard a huge bang. he ran into the other room and something had thrown that wooden chest against the wall and it had opened and like everything had spilled out. And he was by himself in the room. And so his brothers come back and they're like, what did you do? He said he didn't want to stay in the room after that. He was like, we have to get out. I told my dad, the moral of the story is go drinking with your brothers when they want you to go.
Yes.
But the last one was in the book that my great uncle had written. So my great grandpa's family, like I said, they had 16 kids and there were two girls listed as being named Helen. So the first Helen had died at a very young age. And then the next girl that was born was also named Helen. So there were two Helens listed.
Yeah.
So the second Helen was born. And my great grandpa's father was coming home one night. It was dark and he saw a little kid in the road. And he's like, that's Helen. What is she doing? What is she doing out? What is she doing running around? Gets back home. It's night. He asks my great-great-grandma, like, what is the kid doing outside? Why is she outside playing? And she was like, what are you talking about? She's sleeping in front of the fire. And then it was right after that, the second Helen died suddenly, young. So the theory was they believed that that sighting that my great-great-grandfather saw was the first Helen coming to take her sister away.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's kind of sweet in a way.
It is sweet. But yeah. So that's why I say this is why I love this stuff is it is in my blood. So those were just a couple stories from my
That's so cool
Irish
that you have family
side.
Stories.
I love it. I would love to know more. I would love to get back to Ireland anyway and just I would love to go see my family and just sit and talk. Like I've met part of my dad's side, my grandma's cousins, they have passed away, but I haven't met any of his family over there. And then my mom's family that I stayed with in Wexford, they had been over to the States a lot. Their son had come over and to work in North Carolina, I believe. So like,
yeah,
when he come over, he would come to, like, we'd have like cookouts and stuff with him just to welcome him. But yeah, I mean, I still have a lot of family that's still over there because
we should go visit
family. See, I would love to.
I say we too because I want to tag along.
It was really, it's really cool. Like if anybody ever has a chance to look at their roots and kind of look where they came from, like do it. It's just cool to know where you come from.
This is why my mom wants to go to Scotland so bad.
Oh my gosh. I want to go to Scotland just because
me and her
after doing this.
I travel a lot with my mom, and once coronavirus is over, it's safe to travel again and everything's normal. We want to try to go to the UK, and we know we want to go to London. We want to go to Belfast, and I'm going to try to meander a trip to Glasgow in there.
Do it.
And maybe not tell her about it. I'm like, Mom, I'll plan everything. Don't you worry about it. And then we'll go here, and then just I'll make her think we're going somewhere else.
That would be cool.
Hopefully she doesn't have her heart set on it, but I think she'd like to go to Glasgow before like anywhere else.
I don't know. It's just when you're in places like that, you realize how young we are over here. We're babies over
here.
We
are babies.
I mean, you go over there and there's like castles. And
except now we're in our rebellious teenage years.
Yes, we are. But I loved like reading about my grandpa's side, my great grandpa's side, they had 16 kids and his dad would go to England in the summer and he was basically a migrant worker. Like he would work in England and then send the money back home. And then when some of the boys got older, they would go help him. But it left my great great grandma with taking care of a farm with sometimes at least 16 kids. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. And then
that's where the women in your family get it from. Like all that strength and independence and listen to me and don't take, I'm not taking your bullshit.
We're stubborn. I do. Sometimes I try and channel like my ancestors of like, okay, if they can do it, I can too.
Yes, for real.
So that's all I've got.
That was a good story.
Thank you.
Yeah, I kind of wish we got the laugh track in after to make me feel better.
I'm sorry.
About everything.
But I had to talk about fairies. Otherwise, you'd be... I had to talk about it first. Otherwise,
yeah,
you'd be super confused.
I would just think people were scared of these little Tinkerbell things going around and not know why.
They're troublemakers.
Yeah, I guess so. They like to get into mischief.
Mm-hmm. So if you
I guess it is true, though, that when Irish eyes are smiling, they're usually up to something. Well, if any of you guys have any stories you want to tell us, hit us up on Twitter at DSOL Podcast or Instagram at Darker Side of Life Podcast. And our email address is darkersideoflifepodcast@gmail.com.
And watch out for the fairies.
Watch out for the fairies. Mm-hmm. Don't make them mad like we did earlier. Yep.
That was weird. That never happened before.
Mm-hmm. And we will see you guys in a couple weeks.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
We're probably pissing fairies off right now.